The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And thanks to today's sponsors, Arm & Hammer's new cloud control cat litter, DDP Yoga, Indeed.com, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and O'Reilly Auto Parts. And today it's a return to the rock with Fozzy. High school bands. School of Rock, High School Confidential. Rich Ward, Frank Fonseret, Billy Gray sit down to talk music. But this time it's all about our high school bands. Fozzy's not the first band for any of us. And you'll hear how we all got started. The first cover songs we learned, the first gigs we played, the first real songs we wrote, some of the ridiculous and short-lived band names that we had. And then you can hear how all that turned into Fozzy. And then our spring tour coincidentally starts in May 15th in Greenville, South Carolina at the Firmament. May 16th, Greensboro, North Carolina at Cone Denim. Nita Strauss opens both of those shows. May 17th, Virginia Beach at the Lunatic Luau. May 18th at the MMRBQ in Camden, New Jersey at the BB&T Pavilion. Then we go July 12th, Mansfield, Ohio at Incarceration. And then this fall, we're headed out west, Unleashed in the West, as we built a tour around our opening slot at the Stadium Show, Bank of California Stadium in Los Angeles, supporting Iron Maiden. And that's on September 14th, but we'll be on the road starting September 5th in Denver, Colorado Springs, Grand Junction, Colorado, Salt Lake City, Crystal Bay, Nevada, San Francisco, Sacramento, Las Vegas, San Diego, Tempe, Los Angeles, Tucson, El Paso, Dallas, Houston, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and we finish September 28th in Atlanta, Georgia at the Masquerade. All ticket info at FozzyRock.com. You can also buy tickets to our exclusive, special, amazing VIP meet and greet. We do it before each show, one of the best in the business. We do a mini set of originals and covers. We take pictures. We take requests, sign autographs, kiss babies, and shake hands. Come hang with Fozzy right now at FozzyRock.com for all ticket and VIP information. And thanks to all the great sponsors here on Talk is Jericho that make us possible here, including O'Reilly Auto Parts. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Our professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so here we are in Berlin on a day off, big Fozzy tour. Everything's been going great. And the other day we were having a conversation and Frank, our drummer, came up with the idea of doing a show about our high school bands.
Yep. And you said it was my first good idea in 20 years.
So it's the core members of Fozzy, Frank, Rich, and Billy, and myself. And I think that's a pretty good idea. And I guess maybe just start with you, Frank. When did you start playing drums?
I started playing drums when I was 10. I actually started off on guitar, oddly enough.
Really?
Yeah, and we see how well that went. And
just like Alex Van Halen.
Yeah. I wanted a guitar, and I was given a guitar, and I started taking lessons, and I never took to it. It just didn't feel natural. I mean, like, holding it and posing in the mirror felt perfectly natural, right? You know, but actually trying to play it. And I was taking lessons with this guy who was this old man, who, you know, probably, you know, was playing for a bebop band in the 40s or something. And I just remember he would hold my fingers on the strings. He said, "You got to build up calluses on your fingers, see?" And and he had a glass eye, by the way. And
he was Bugs Bunny's nemesis.
Yeah, he was. And he said, "You have to, you know," he would show me how to finger a chord, and he's like, "You got to press really hard on the string so you'll get calluses like this." And he would take his thumb and like press on my finger like super hard on the fretboard. I'm like, "Ow." And I'm like, "This was supposed to be fun, you know?" It just I hated my teacher. So I gave that up, and so then I decided, nah, I don't want to be a guitar player. I want to be a drummer. My mom said, "Well, we bought you a guitar. You didn't really like it, so let's just get you a drum and see how you do with that." And she just bought me like a little snare drum and on a stand with a pair of sticks. And as soon as I had the sticks in my hand, I just wouldn't stop. You know, it's like, okay, I guess you like the drums. And so, hold on a second. Drums.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, so I'll just kind of throw myself in there. So when I was in junior high school, actually before that, I think elementary school.
Wow, that's early.
Yeah, early. And I decided I wanted to be a guitar player because I was a big fan of music, as you know, Beatles and whatever. So there was a place at the end of the street in Winnipeg called Kent's Music. And when I went into Kent's Music, that guy also had a glass eye. He was a Scottish guy. "You'll pay your dues. You'll pay your some money. $15 a lesson." Whatever he would say. But he had one weird eye going left.
Yeah, what's
And I remember
that?
There was a big poster of Jerry Mercer of April Wine on the wall. At Kent's Music. I don't know why.
There you go.
And so Brad was my guitar teacher. And Brad was this kind of a weird guy, kind of had Malcolm Young hair. And he wore, I remember, like red long johns as pants. And I would always have to learn like Irish Washerwoman, which is bing, 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 bing. And so I learned that one week and he's like, "Hey, man. This sucks. Why don't you like, why don't we learn something? Like, what do you want to learn? Like, what do you like?" "I like Def Leppard." He goes, "Okay." Then he charted Photograph for me. And he charted Start Me Up by the Stones, because he went to Minneapolis to see the Stones in 81 on the Tattoo U tour. And then he charted Paranoid. And I remember I was like, "You know, I just found out, like, you know, the song doesn't even have the title Paranoid in it." And he's like, "What do you expect it's going to be? Paranoid, paranoid, I am paranoid." So I later gave up the guitar and made the very smart move to take up the tuba in grade 7, where you could take guitar, band, and I went into the tuba, and I kind of got strayed from my rock and roll roots. But
little known fact, tuba, very popular with the chicks.
Along with the red long johns.
And one last thing. So this guy, Brad, he was in a band in Winnipeg called the Crash Test Dummies. Move forward 13 years later. So that guy Brad Roberts was my old guitar teacher.
He was huge. Yeah,
he was so big that Weird Al Yankovic even did a parody of his song.
That's when you know you've
that's
made
when you're
it.
Huge.
Yeah. You have made it.
The caveat of it is I played a celebrity hockey game in 2000 at the Garden. And he was singing the national anthem. I went up to him, "Hey, Chris Jericho, WWE, used to be my guitar teacher." He just totally shunned me, just walked away.
Whoa.
He just went, "Yeah," and just walked away. I even heard him go, "Yeah." And walked away.
Yeah.
Oh, and
so, Billy, how'd you start playing guitar?
I played ice hockey up until the point of about 11, and always liked Kiss, you know, even like during kindergarten and all those grades up until, you know, I started playing guitar. Anyway, I got
Please tell me that your hockey coach had a glass eye.
After I slapped a slap shot at him. Okay. So I had a babysitter whose son played guitar. He had an Aria Pro 2 Les Paul copy with a PV stack. I saw him playing Long Time by Boston. I really got into it. My dad had a guitar in the closet all the time as a kid, so broke out the guitar, asked my mom if I could take lessons, and the guy started teaching me, and he recommended a teacher in Charlotte who was Tim Murray, and he taught me Stairway to Heaven. That was my first.
Wow. That's a hard song.
I know, dude.
Through the beginning. He picked that song because it had a lot of elements. It had all the finger picking stuff. It had bar chords. And then he taught me the solo. So
right off the bat?
Right off the bat.
Wow.
And he would do like Frank did. He would press my fingers on the strings. He would do all that. And
that's why you were killer when you were young.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
And by the time, you know, by the time I finished that solo and the song, I always look forward to going to lessons to this guy.
Right.
So,
because it had to be fun.
It was fun,
you know, when you had somebody
dude,
that could make
and he
it
was
fun,
always
was
very, you know, he was, oh, man, you're doing good. You're doing, let's go to this part. Let's go to this part. So it helps with your confidence.
Right.
So, you know, by the time I learned the song, my favorite teacher says, oh, well, I'm going to New York. I'm going to be moving to New York, but there's going to be another teacher teaching you, and he's going to be really good, and, you know, you're going to enjoy it, and, you know, it's going to be great. So the next teacher comes in, and he wants to teach me, like, Mary Had a Little Lamb type of stuff, and I'm just kind of disinterested in it. So I would bring him Van Halen songs, and he would be just flustered with it and be like, oh, well, this is flashy. This is very flashy. I brought him Spirit of the Radio. Oh, well, you need a wah-wah pedal to do this. Finally started, you know, kind of learning on my own by slowing tape down back in the day, and moved on from there.
You would slow the tape down.
Yeah. Dad had a little mini cassette player, and it had a button that would slow it down to half speed.
Oh.
And I would record the off of another cassette player with that, slow it down on the mini cassette player, and learn the just really slow notes, but learn how to play it.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Rich, how did you start playing guitar?
I lived in kind of a hip downtown area. This was back when living in downtown meant you lived in crappy, rundown homes. Like, everyone was moving to the suburbs in the early 80s. That was the trend. So all the homes kind of downtown were kind of where the poor people lived, which is where the ward residents hailed from. And I remember one day I was walking to the park, where me and my friends would kind of meet to play soccer or throw frisbee or whatever. And I heard someone playing guitar really loud, like from the sidewalk. And I just wandered up to this house and the door was open and I kind of peeked in. And it was just a 12-year-old kid. And I will never forget this guy who looked like he was probably could have been in Fog Hat, you know, big mustache, super long hair, stoner guy, you know, and his name was Boyd Allbritton. I will never forget it.
It's a hell of a handle.
I know, man. He had a wall of amplifiers and a bunch of guitars. And it was the first time. I mean, I loved rock music. I loved all, you know, I was listening to all the hard rock and heavy metal that I could consume based on what was on the radio and what my friends were into. But I always thought that was like, you could never do it. I finally saw somebody who was a regular guy who went to work every day on a construction site, and he played guitar and he sounded great. And it was loud. It was amazing. That was when it first kind of clicked that, oh, well, maybe I could play guitar too. Because if Boyd Allbritton can play guitar and he lives in my neighborhood, because yeah, I thought it was only like, it's like being an astronaut. Yeah. Well, if you're going to be an astronaut, I'm going to have to move to Houston or something and like, you know, like go to the moon. So a friend of mine in the neighborhood and I went in together and we bought a guitar so we could share it. So we would get it on an alternate day. So I would get it, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays.
Like a child in a divorce.
Correct. because independently, we couldn't afford a guitar. And then eventually my dad bought me a 1966 Fender Mustang from a pawn shop, which seems cool now. But back then in 1979, the 66 Mustang, it looked like a bow. The neck was so warped on it. But we would just do what everybody did that I knew, which was that you would listen to the records and you'd try to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just like, and you'd have a circle of friends that we helped, like a support group. Hey, do you know how to play Looks That Kill? Do you know how to play Paranoid? And everyone would kind of share what they kind of learned. And a great, the great tie between Billy Gray and myself, how we kind of knew each other. There was a family called the Gill Brothers.
Yep.
And the Gill Brothers were amazing musicians.
Yes.
And I was friends with the Gills, and so was Billy. But Billy and I didn't know each other, but we both knew the Gills. Now, the Gills could play Rush covers. They were badass.
They were the illegitimate sons or brothers of Rush back in the day.
Yes, they were. They were a three-piece family band.
Family band.
Bass, guitar,
drums.
They were
awesome. Perfect.
And they were badass. And I learned a lot from them. I would go over, and Kevin Gill was the guitar player.
Yep.
And I would learn from him. Then I learned from Sean Gilley, who we both knew.
Sean Gilley was
awesome.
And I would
go up to Reliable Music in Charlotte, which is where all the young musicians hung out, and try to get the guys who worked at the music store. You try to watch them and what they learned. And I took lessons, like all of us talking. But I don't know that any of that really helped that much, other than some basic fundamentals like you would if you went to coach it, baseball or something.
Until you're actually playing it. Like, you know, none of us, you know, Paul McCartney on down, are really musicians that can read charts and stuff like that. And that's one thing that always kind of is boring about guitar lessons, which is why I think I went to tuba, because I was bored just like playing Irish Washerwoman all the time. But there was a high school or a junior high school battle of the bands, and the band that played was called Elixir Frenzy, which is still a cool name for 1985. And I remember the guitar player's name was Garth Kwasnitsa. Which I still don't know how to spell that. And I always tried, because I just thought, like, what a cool name. And the other guy in the band, and I might be getting this wrong, but there was another great player called Rod Makovic, who I think now is like a classical guy, but he was like the Randy Rhodes. Both those guys are great. And one of their bands, I'll say it was Elixir Frenzy, they played Flying High Again. And they had candles, like a candelabra, on stage at the high school, junior high school talent show. And that's when I was like, "Oh my God, this tuba sucks! Like, I want to be like Elixir Frenzy."
Do you remember what grade you would have been in? What year?
It was just crossing over into grade 8, I believe. So 7 is 83, so probably 1983. So Flying High Again was like the new Aussie record at the time, because it was before Bark at the Moon came out.
That's so crazy that you say that, because that was one of my next big epiphanies as well, was the high school battle of the bands. I was in 7th grade, or maybe it was a talent show. I don't remember what it was.
Something like that.
Yes, but there was a group of 9th graders in my junior high. I was in 7th, and they played Jesse's Girl. And I just remember thinking, looking at these people who were not that much older than me.
Right,
they were
like you said,
band.
They're guys that you knew in a band.
I was like, how is this? They're playing songs.
Right, the solos.
Went through the same thing.
Yeah. Who was your guy, Frank? Did you see any band in high school or anything that made you decide to want to start being in a band?
Well, I mean, no, I wanted to be in a band, you know, right? Like the first time I saw Kiss on TV, I wanted to be in a band, you know?
But to actually find the guys, right?
Did it seem, though, to you, so did it seem that, like, for me, it seemed like it was impossible. Like, when I see Kiss, they're in a band. It's like, that's not, I mean.
Yeah, but you don't know them.
Right.
But that's just, like, for me, like to go to, let's say, I don't know, Dallas. I don't know where Dallas is. I know nothing about Dallas. But once, like, there was Calgary wrestling, I know how to get to Calgary.
Right.
I can go there and be a wrestler.
You saw the junior high band. It clicked because you said, I can do this.
Did you have that moment?
No, I didn't really, because I didn't have that kind of sense of impossibility. I was always like, you know, where do I sign up? You know, it was like, I thought it's entirely possible. And I actually thought it was like my destiny, you know? And and so
you had one of those parents who's like, you could do anything you want. Jericho and I just got cigarette butts flicked at us.
Yeah. No, but I did. I guess I probably got more encouragement from my parents or my mom. But no, I just never had that sense. It was just like, as soon as I started playing drums, it just beating around on a snare drum, I was like, this is for me. And I was never in a band in high school, and this is going to sound really arrogant, I don't mean it this way, but I could never, first of all, I didn't go to a
drum roll.
I didn't really go to like a musician's high school, you know, so there weren't a lot of musicians that I knew of in high school, you know. I mean, a lot of people liked music and everything, but not a lot of people played, and the only people who played weren't either very good or very serious about it. They just wanted to fool around, you know? And I was dead serious, man. It was like, I got to be famous by the time I'm 18. I'm serious about this. It's like, I got to find guys who want to do this. And so I wasn't actually in a band until I was out of high school. The first time I ever remember playing with another musician, though, there was a guy who lived not far down the street from me when I was probably about 12, maybe 11 or 12. And I'd been playing drums for like a year or a year and a half. That I found out played guitar. But he played kind of, you know, he played like a big hollow body, you know, and played kind of jangly guitar, you know, but I didn't care. It was like, can I jam with you? You know, and he let me actually bring my drums over to his house and set up like in his living room or whatever. And we actually jammed. And I think he played like the riff for Sweet Home Alabama or something, you know, and Frank went, and I just started going, you know, just going crazy. I probably drove the poor guy nuts, you know, because I probably played entirely too fast and busy and everything, but it was the first time I actually like made music, you know, like with another person. But yeah, like my first actual band that was like a guitar player, a bass player, and a singer or whatever wasn't until actually I was out of high school. I couldn't find anybody in high school that was worth playing with.
How about you, Billy? Did you see any bands when you were in high school that major or junior?
I did. It was actually junior high school, and I was coming out of elementary school going into junior high, and all my friends were older. They were already in the junior high school, and they had already told these guys. They were Brian and Patrick Butler. They had a band called U.S. Metal.
U.S. Metal.
Great. You remember the name.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. And so, you know, going into junior high school, you play guitar too, you know. We'll let you come over and check us out practicing. So I went over and saw them play, and they were playing Crazy Train and stuff that. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I played my eighth grade talent show. We played... We were called Disciples of the Watch, and we had no vocalists.
That's pre-Testament, too.
And we still got out there. We played Looks That Kill and Ain't Talking About Love by Van Halen. And like I said, no singer, but, you know, the girls were screaming, and it was, you know,
my first
rock
band
and roll
no
show.
Singer.
Well, that's how it started, and I had that same thing. I got a great story to tell you guys about no singer after. But so as we start to morph into a band, so when I saw Elixir Frenzy, out of nowhere, my dad grew up with this guy called Al Ahoff, and they were friends throughout childhood. So we were always family friends. There's two brothers, Kevin Ahoff and Ryan Ahoff. And Kevin one day is like, you know, I play guitar. And I remember he had this red Stratocaster ripoff for like 3 years. He never got a new guitar, but he was one of those guys that like you, Billy, at 13 or 14 years old could play like Crazy Train, but didn't really want to play it. He was a Maiden guy, Metallica. And he was into all these obscure metal bands. So I remember he came over one day, and my cousin was this guy called Ray Gilby, and he had an autograph from Paul Stanley. Wow. He married my cousin. It was in a frame. It said, "To Ray, rock on, Paul Stanley with a star." Wow. And I thought, Ray Gilby, and he's a kind of a short, fat, bald guy. If you're listening, Ray, you know you are. But I just thought, I thought Ray was the coolest guy. And he had a Paul McCartney Hofner ripoff, like Paul McCartney's violin bass, with the strings were so long, they were hanging off the side. And I asked him if I could borrow it to start messing around. And Kevin Ahoff came over. I said, "Yeah, I play bass. Well, I play guitar." And so he taught me a song. And the first song I ever made music to with another musician, which coincidentally, I didn't even think about it, is a song by a band called Trouble called Revelation Life or Death, which I think I might be the only person on the planet whose first song was a obscure Trouble song with 5 or 6 tempo changes, wow, which is why I'm so weird that way. And then the other song we played was Peter Gunn theme. Dun, 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 dun. But I still remember Trouble and no singer. Bow, 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 bow. Bow, bow, bow. That's the guitar now. Here's my part. Boom, bow. I just go boom. And then I'm supposed to go. And dude, I listened to that cassette about 100 times. That was the beginning of like the rock and roll of playing with somebody.
That, That was one of the things when we were talking before. That was what made me think of this. Is like I wanted to ask everybody, what was the first song you ever played as part of a band? Like, you know, even though your band didn't have a singer, my first band didn't have a singer the first gig we did, but still it was guitar, bass, and drums, and we played songs. So yeah. That was your...
Well, we didn't have drums. It's just, it was the making music with another human being. Uh-huh. The first one was the guitar and bass only, Trouble, Revelation, Life or Death.
And what was yours, Bill?
Disciples of the Watch.
No, but what was the first song you guys ever played, like, as a performance?
Looks to Kill and Ain't Talking About Love as a performance.
See, that wasn't a performance for us. That's just two guys in a basement jamming. Okay.
And we rehearsed those before we did it. Gotcha. After school every day.
I tried out for a band. I knew a group of guys that I heard needed a guitar player. And I tried out for the band, and they said, yeah... we need a singer. Do you know the lyrics to these songs? Like, I literally, the first band I ever tried out for on guitar, I didn't get the job, but they said I knew the lyrics to a few of these songs. So I was the singer for a heavy metal band at a pool party my seventh grade year, going into the eighth grade. But it was a great moment of realization that...
Did you have a name?
I don't remember. Okay. Yeah, it's one of those things. It wasn't my band. It was a group of dudes playing because it was a pool party, one of those pickup things. But I really started practicing at that point because I didn't get the gig. Mm. You know, the first rejection it was rough. And so I really started practicing. And I sang really terribly, I'm sure. All the classics, Maiden, Priest. Yeah.
But see, that's the thing is that you started, like Frank, you said you didn't have this, but once me and Ahoff started playing, then you find out there's other guys in school that play.
Yes.
And, you know, some guys, I remember there's a guy called Dale Martinuk. He had like this wicked kit. And I don't know if he plays or not still, but at the time he was the guy because he had like a double
kit. Like the kit with the most drums on it.
But the most drums of the same brand.
And the same color.
It wasn't the bastardized.
No, it was he got like a Tama.
One yellow one, one red one, one green one.
Yeah, a double kick drum Tama set.
Oh, man.
And that was my first official band. It was called Fatal Accident. Which was spelled
AXEDENT.
Accident. And people were like, is it Fatal Accident? No, it's Fatal Accident. Well, then why don't you do AXADNT? Then is it Fatal Accident?
Accident.
And then, of course, you would draw the logo with a big, you know, hangman's axe.
But you've always been that way, though.
Yeah.
It's always about connecting, like wordplay and imagery and stuff. So that's carried on.
And that was that was in 85, because I remember it's like Fatal Accident. This is it.
Fatal Accident ever gig? Did you ever?
We played one gig at a party. That might be my official
first
thing.
Okay, tell me the songs.
But it was, hold on, it was like that movie, That Thing You Do. Have you ever seen That Thing You Do? Where they're called The Wonders, but they're spelled O-N-E.
So everyone thinks it's
the O-Needers.
O-Needers, yeah.
So I thought we were Fatal Accident. It's accident. So what I remember playing is two things. I remember we played Heavens on Fire, because I still know that on bass. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Bom, bom.
That's a hard one.
Bom, bom. Yeah. And then the other one, I don't know why we were doing this, and I didn't know the song, but I tried to learn it, was Before the Dawn by Judas Priest. Whoa. And we had this guy called David Birds singing, and he choked. There's, I don't know, 5 people at the party, maybe 10. It wasn't like a big movie party. And I remember he was like, Before the Dawn. And people were laughing. So we kicked him out of the band. During the gig.
During the gig.
And they're like, who's going to sing?
I was
like,
that is strong.
And so they're like, who's going to sing the last song in the set, Holy Diver? And I'm like, I'll sing it. Meanwhile, playing and singing has not nor ever will be my thing. So not only am I screwing up the bass line, which I hardly knew either, I didn't even know the lyrics to the song. That's so here's what I sang. Holy Diver, you've been gone too long in the midnight sea. Why don't you climb up a tree? And that came back to haunt me for years on end. Holy Diver, why don't you climb up a tree? Shut up. And so that was Fatal Accident's first and last gig ever.
Wow.
So Rich. My first official gig as a guitar player, I still have photographs of it. We played a 3-song set. The name of the band was White Clover, because apparently that was the first name of Kansas when they changed their name, and the singer was obsessed with Kansas. Guys,
that's some serious street cred.
Yes, serious street cred. We had all the chicks, 0.
Yeah. Just like Kansas.
Yeah. We opened with Turn Up the Radio.
Wow.
Yes. Nice. I was, of course, in great Rich Ward fashion. I was the Rudolph Schenker of the band, not going to even try to touch that solo.
Yeah, didn't that guy like put on like a guitar manual or something?
Yeah, I was like, okay, you're really good at playing chords. Stick to it. So we did Turn Up the Radio, I Want You to Want Me, and Still Loving You.
Wow.
Nice. Right.
Yeah, it was
a good set list.
Good set. And for some bizarre reason, my mom got me the fake leather tight pants, you know, to look rock and roll. And I was trying to accessorize. So I got my red soccer shin guards that were like slip-on socks that pour on the outside of them. So I had these weird kind of red leggings that had a puffy front on the on them to protect nice. In case anyone tried to kick me while I was playing.
Nice.
Yeah. And I one of the guys from the local kind of shop class made me a guitar cord that went to my amp that had chasing lights that would kind of go. Whoa, because back then it's like,
yeah, got son.
Production value.
Yeah.
That's killer. Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Billy, you're first? Or is it, you already talked about your first?
Yeah, the first one.
Okay. So was there another one?
Oh, yeah. I can go on to the battle of the band's high school days. Okay. There was a band called Animal Bag back home in Charlotte, which actually had a legit video on MTV. They did really well.
Yeah.
And but before they did that, the drummer and the guitarist and myself and a bass player had a band called Felons. And
Felon. Oh, Felon.
Okay.
So, hey, like, fella better.
Hey, fella.
So we were playing the Battle of the Bands at our high school, West Charlotte High School. And mom was in the audience.
That everything. Must have been the year after I played, because my first gig was, and I'm a year older than you. My first gig ever was the Battle of the Bands, West Charlotte High School. Yeah. So I must have played the year before you did, because then I moved to Atlanta.
Our illustrious singer, while we were doing the gig, we played Stick It, and we played
Stick It!
By Great White.
We played Stick It and Fatal Accident,
yeah,
too.
Okay, so we did. We did two songs. We did Stick It and Piece of Your Action. We did Piece of Your Action first. Then when the time came to play Stick It, the whole administration of the school sitting right there in the front row, well, our singer decides to flip them all off
while
we're playing Stick It. My mom's in the crowd. Her eyes are this big. After the show, she's like, you know, y'all were good, but you really embarrassed me. And I was just like, oh. And of course, we got disqualified. So that's my claim to fame. It's a high school battle of the bands right there.
You said, Mom, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
And then you whipped your cock out. No.
It's so funny. Stick It, though. Because I remember that was when David Byrds blew Before the Dawn. He already had nailed Stick It. And I remember it was fun for bass because it just goes gong,
yeah,
gong. It was cool to be a bass player back in those days because every inch of the song was just bomb, boom, bomb. Yeah.
Out of song the road rule. And I'm rocking.
That's my favorite line.
Bam, bam. That's my favorite line of the song.
Yeah, man.
I used to rock that stuff.
So, okay, as we move forward through the Fatal Accident, so when I started high school, a new group of guys were around that were singers and players. So me and Ahoff were like the package deal. And then we met this guy called Warren Rumpel.
Mr. Rumpel.
Years later, Scott Ian famously dissed when we went to meet Anthrax, and deservedly so. He said to Scott Ian, he goes, I see that you have ton shaved in your chest. I see you have not shaved in your chest. Is that ton backwards because you guys are so heavy?
And he goes, that's the stupidest. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
And walked away.
I have a hide.
So he was a drummer. And he had this whole group of guys from the other junior high school that we met up with. So the first band that was the big jam was called Primitive Means, which it was kind of more of a punkier type thing, which is actually a pretty cool name once again. So it was me and Ahoff, and me and Ahoff were pretty good. Like I would, Kevin would teach me how to play, you know, all the Maiden, all the Metallica. We still didn't have a drummer, but I wasn't Steve Harris or Cliff Burton, but in my mind, I thought I was. Like I could do it. So we were playing with a bunch of other guys, and the gimmick of this band was you would try and write funny lyrics. So we had a song called like Chewy Man and a song called Tipper Gory, I think it was. Oh, about awesome. A zombie Tipper Gore. And then the other one was Gay Nights. And a lot of these songs would have intros. So the intro for this was taking two cymbals and rubbing them together. So it goes, whoosh, oh, so gay ahead. What are you unleashing out of your sheath? And then, oh, and then that would start off the big thing. It'd be like Gay Nights, ding 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 ding, Gay Nights. And you would make it, and these are nights like K N I G H T S.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd basically just make it up as you go. And Kev would start a riff. I would follow along. Drums would come in. Guys would shout out some lyrics. Years later, I gave my cousin Chad a copy of The Primitive Means, and we went skiing in Panorama, British Columbia. And my dad and I, and maybe my mom or whoever else, was sitting in the hot tub. And Chad goes upstairs to play some music out of the balcony ghetto blaster and decides to put on Gay Nights. And the whole place is listening to this intro. Oh, so Gay Ahead, what is that coming out of your sheath? I'm like, Chad, shut it off. Shut it off. He goes, I can't find it. Stop it. My dad's like, what is this? I'm like, it's our band. He goes, well, this is your band? This is disgusting. Turn it off. But wait, if you heard the song, you'd really know. So that was the end of Primitive Means.
Oh, my God. Well, my first gig, the band didn't actually have a name or a singer. It was just me and two guitar players and a bass player. My buddy Clayton, who I'm still friends with, was playing guitar. This guy named Chris, oh God, he's going to kill me. Chris Briley was playing bass. And oddly enough, the other guitar player was this guy named Rick Shepard, who ended up working for Dallas Austin. He ended up being like an engineer for Dallas Austin. So he got, like, he, wow, like, you know, actually like did
who's Dallas
really,
Austin?
He's a famous producer from Atlanta. Gotcha. Yeah.
He makes beats, man.
Yeah, he makes beats, man. He ended up in that world. I don't think he's still in it, but we ended up calling the band Split Image, which I thought was a cool name. But
special guest, Fatal Accident.
And Primitive Means.
So our first gig was at a party in the off, you know, like in apartment complexes, they have the clubhouse.
Yeah.
We played
that
the club.
Was my first gig too.
Yeah,
was
we
the
played
clubhouse.
We played the clubhouse in apartment complex, and the first song of our set was Switch 625 by Def Leppard, because we had no singer. It was an instrumental.
Right.
But then we went on to play United by Judas Priest, and we played Living After Midnight, and we played some song by this band called The Shoes, which I don't
interesting.
Remember. Yeah,
I think they might have even opened for Van Halen at some point. That name sounds real familiar.
They had a couple of, like, you know, songs that made a little bit of radio. They were like the Producers, you know, that band that, like, from Atlanta that had a few. Mm-hmm. Okay,
just a
you know.
Quick little segue. You're talking about The Shoes, and you know, Van Halen always had really bad opening acts.
Yes,
right.
You know the reason why? I think Rich knows this. When I had Randy Bachman on, he opened, BTO opened for Van Halen's 5150 tour. Because Sammy Hagar said, I don't want anyone coming on stage and just thinking about David Lee Roth. I want you guys to go out there and play 30 minutes of your biggest hits. Mm-hmm. And literally, as soon as BTO finished, Van Halen started. And Randy said, like, Sammy said, you know why Van Halen never used opening good opening bands? Because they wanted to keep all the merch money. So they'd always have, because I saw them with the Velcros, and there was The Shoes and all these other things.
I saw them with Kaji Gugu.
Yeah, I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
So, Rich, who was your like your main high school band? Did you have one?
No, I didn't. And the reason is that it was hard to, like, my parents moved, and so I lost my entire group of Charlotte friends that moved to Atlanta, but we lived in the suburbs. And then I found a group of guys to play with, and they had a band called the Level Creek Band, because the name of the street was Level Creek.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they were a bunch of Southern rock guys, and they were all great. They could play all this, like the Hat Molly Hatchet. They could play this, you know, they were really good. And I learned from them. And then I met another group of guys at the school who were into Duran Duran, Scott Banks, and some other players that Mark Dixon. And I started playing with these guys, and we were playing that was the first time that I started actually gigging, kind of regularly playing high school dances. Because back then, if the real way to gig was playing high school dances,
yeah.
And they were a big thing. This is pre-DJs.
Yeah, all our dances,
homecomings were all bands.
Yeah, all our high school dances were bands. They weren't DJs or anything. And we actually, have you guys ever had a band play your high school dance that actually went on to have some notoriety?
Yeah, Zebra, right?
Zebra played one of our high school dances. I remember, like, because that's such an unusual name, going to see this, you know, high school dance and seeing this band called Zebra, and they were three-piece, and they were great. And then, of course, like, you know, a few years later, they're on the radio.
Got a couple hits that they still play on Boneyard.
They were great, man.
But that was the best training for me, is to learn how to play Bryan Adams and Def Leppard and Duran Duran and Howard Jones, like learning all of these different rhythm techniques and learning how to really play rhythm guitar, because a lot of guys were coming up and they were just learning to be, you know, Warren DeMartini, or, you know, like they were learning the shred stuff. That wasn't going to happen where I lived, because I couldn't play bars. When Billy and I were coming up, you had to be 21 years old to be even play in a bar.
Yep.
So your only options, if you were going to gig, was to play
dances and
that was meant to be in a variety band. And my best gig ever was, I was playing the homecoming dance at my own high school, which was amazing, because it's like I get to be the hero. And the guy who brought in the PA system had his brand new wireless. I was like, oh my God, you have a wireless system?
Whoa.
So like, it gets big dollars for a high school kid. He goes, you want to use it? I was like, yes. So I had the wireless system on, and I went into the crowd when we were playing Bryan Adams' Heaven, and I grabbed a girl to do a little slow dance while I'm playing the song, and the wireless went out, and at 100 decibels, and it's through the whole PA. All it was that super loud, that sound when your whole system goes out while everyone's slow dancing, and you get the, what's going on? You know,
some things never change.
Yes, ever.
Billy, who was your, did you have a main high school band?
Well, that was the Felon.
Oh, the Felon.
Felon things. And then,
Fella.
Fellows. And after that, it kind of went to, it went to the illustrious Sleaze Patrol, which myself and Possum from Revolver played in, and we went to playing some good club shows. We played.
Were you still in high school at the time?
Yeah. Wow. We played Pterodactyl Club. We opened up for all this band called New York back in the day, and they were pretty big.
I remember
back in the day, you know, a circuit band.
Yeah.
And we would headline this place in Rock Hill on Cherry Road.
Cherry Road.
Skating
we all know
rink.
About Cherry Road.
We would put 500 people in
Jeez.
There playing cover tunes from Metallica, Motley Crue, Van Halen, Poison, and you know, things kind of went from there. And then I moved to L.A. with Possum as well,
you
after
know what's
that.
So funny? Like, you guys were so much bigger than our band. Like, I thought, like, so our, my big high school band was Scimitar.
Yeah.
And it was me, Kevin Ahoff, and Warren Rumpel. There's three names for you. Irvin Ahoff and Rumpel.
Our trio.
Which I actually wanted to call the name of the band AIR.
That would have been perfect.
Cool.
Yeah, but it was an Anthrax song, but the guys wanted to do a Scimitar, which, of course, the T was shaped like a scimitar, like Sinbad's curved sword.
As you do.
As you do, because the logo is the most important thing when you start a band, right?
Not to mention people who said, why you call yourselves AIR?
Exactly. So going back to what you said, I remember one time, so Warren decided he was going to play drums, and Warren was a lot like Lars Ulrich. He played by sheer will and determination with early Lars. Lars now is amazing, but no drumming skills whatsoever. He wanted to play drums. He had a drum set, and he had a house that we could jam in after school. And so he had this really shitty drum set. So we went downtown one day on the bus to pick up because he found a drum set at a pawn shop.
Okay.
And it was, once again, it was a Frankenstein drum set. So we had three bass drums with, like, and they're all different beats of. And imagine two morons carrying, like, five drums, eight cymbals on the bus. There's people trying on the bus. We're trying to get off the bus. Like, don't leave without us. Like, and so he
put all your equipment on the city bus?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the only way we had to get downtown. So we bought the bus pawn shop. So we set up in his garage, and the first song we knew, because Ahoff, I'll get to this later, but Ahoff was very OCD. He refused to play it unless it was perfect. Now, how do you learn unless you go through it a bit? But the first one that we really knew well was You Really Got Me, with no singer at the time. So we used to jam in the garage with the door up in the summertime as the kids were walking home from school. And there's these two hot chicks that live down the street from Warren. They're called Carla McNaca and Lorraine Foster. And so every time they were walking home, we'd start, come on, guys. And dude, we had long cloaks that we bought at like Salvation Army. Like, you know, the look, like kind of the cloaks.
For
the
rehearsal?
Yeah. Kind of Poison, but also Maiden was kind of doing that stuff.
With the wizard sleeves.
Yeah, I had a big red one. It was called the Simicote.
Oh, my God.
Banana. Yeah. So we do this every day, and finally, after about a month of this, they walked by, and the one chick said, "Don't you know any more songs?" And the other one, "And doesn't anybody sing? This sucks," or something like that. So they walked by, and they were like, "Well, I guess we should try something different." And that's when we started. Actually, we did the we learned more originals. We were always writing original stuff, and that's kind of what our thing was, which is probably why we never played any real shows or anything like that.
Yeah, well, back then, being an original band, it was virtually impossible.
Well, and it was just for us trying to learn and get better. We knew how to play. You know, we knew most of the Maiden catalog up to Somewhere in Time, most of the Metallica up until Master Puppets, because AOF could teach us that stuff. And Warren was out in left field, but at least we kind of knew it. But what was the first original song that you ever wrote?
Yeah, I don't really know. I have tons of cassettes of first ideas, but nothing ever became anything until Stuck Mojo when we first started. It was first real band. I had, you know, when you first start off and you've got a band and you go in the studio and record it, but again, a lot of that stuff, I don't have strong memories of it.
Yeah.
It didn't mean anything. Like I love your stories because those bands meant stuff to you. I always felt like, you know, and I think part of the best thing that I always did was I always surrounded myself with musicians that were way better than me. So I was kind of learning from them. They were years older, but they were also driving the car. So we'd go to the studio, I'd play some guitar stuff, but I wasn't the boss of the band like you were. Like, you had groups that you were like...
There's three guys.
Yes.
For the whole high school. Yeah, our whole high school experience. And we were going to make it... I used to draw comics of all the band members and all the adventures we would have. And then,
Did you ever make the laminates, the backstage passes?
No, but I had comics. I got reams of comics.
Oh, okay.
But the one thing is that we got in an argument one time, and I got kicked out of the band. And I was like, I'll start my other band. So my new band was called Dangerous Curve, spelled C-I-R-V, because my last name is Irvin.
Wow.
Dangerous Curve. And I was like, I had a logo. I had an album cover. I didn't have a band.
Yeah.
So after about two lunch hours of not jamming, I went back there and they took me back into the band. Do you remember the first song you ever wrote, Billy?
I do. It was with Sleaze Patrol back in the... Well, I mean, as far as like a chorus with lyrics and a riff. It was called Shadows in the Night.
Whoa.
Dun, dun, yes,
dun,
it was.
Dun, 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 dun. Shadows in the night, take a look around you.
Well, it was a big hit.
We had a blizzard in 1986, the famous 86 blizzard in Winnipeg, which I'm not going to tell you how much snow, but it was something like 10 feet of snow. It was ridiculous. So everybody was shut in. So we said, tomorrow I'll walk over to Warren's house. It took about half an hour in the snow, but write some songs tonight, and we're going to do a record tomorrow. So the night before, I was possessed. I wrote three really good songs, quote unquote. One was called Sour Grapes. One was called Baby Psycho. One was called Weenie Roast, which is about a cannibal that would make wieners out of human flesh, right? And I still remember Sour Grapes. Here's this, like, dun da ba na 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 dun da ba na 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 dun da ba na 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 ba na 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 na.
Sour Grapes.
No, that's exactly it.
Here you go. Hey, sour Grapes.
Sour Grapes. And then it goes, Sour Grapes, Rotten Cream, Overripe Bananas, It's All for Me. And it was about a guy that liked eating rotten food. It's all I could think of, but the riff was cool.
Shocking, this never went anywhere.
the chorus was, Sour Grapes, I really love them, Sour Grapes, can't get enough of them.
Rotten sour Cream. Grapes.
And then Baby Psycho's, Baby Psycho, dun dun dun, dun 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 dun. Now he's got you, na 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 na. Baby Psycho, yeah, yeah, yeah. Gonna kill you, ha, ha, ha. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, screams from Baby's Room, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now he's got you, na, 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 na.
That is amazing you remember that. I can't remember Fozzy songs in Soundcheck. You're like, now, Rich, you wrote this song 6 years ago.
We've played it 100 times.
I don't know,
but like you said, because I was so into it, and I must have listened to those songs / records, because you'd put 10 songs on a recording, that would be your new record.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you had cassettes that you'd listen to.
Yeah, we would make the song very quickly and then put it onto a cassette, mm-hmm. and we'd have an album. And I would, similar to now, I would put together the track listing and figure out this needs to be the opener and this is the closer and this is what we're going
to
do.
I was too self-loathing to listen to any of my own material. I was like, God, we suck.
We need to work up Sour Grapes for a sound check.
Dude, it's pretty easy. I can show it to you.
We'll get Jack Slade to sling it.
But that's the thing, was like, you know, like you said, there was nobody to really filter this. And I think if you did actually practice and rehearse, it would probably be really good. And that was Aoff's thing. He's like, nobody can ever hear this. It's not good enough. And I was like, dude, it's wicked. It's awesome. Like, who would not want to hear this music?
Sour Grapes, that's a hit.
Yeah, Aoff is me. If you play that for anyone, I will break that cassette.
So how about, you mentioned Battle of the Bands experiences. Did you have, you mentioned yours, Billy, with the finger up. Did you ever have one, Rich, a Battle of the Bands experience?
Yeah, that was the one that I was telling you.
Oh, you went to with the girl?
With the one that I played at West Charlotte High School. The funny thing is that Frank and I took similar paths in that we tried playing covers and we had these bands, but ultimately our first kind of realization as musicians came from our first band. And I will tell you, Frank's was, I met Frank after I had I had moved to Atlanta and I was looking for musicians to kind of network with, and Frank was in a band called Lethal Promise. And I heard about Lethal Promise because in the little Atlanta scene, there were four or five bands that everyone kind of knew. There was Ouija. There was Lethal Promise.
Like Ouija board?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then there was Mark Willis's, who is Fozzy's manager, had a band.
Masada.
Yes. So there was a handful of...
Masada?
Yes. Yeah. They had a song called Long Hair, No Underwear. They also had a song called I Got Crabs, But I Ain't Been Fishing.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I met Frank, and Frank had Charlie Benante hair, mm-hmm. and like the serious bangs right across the
super poofy,
super
curly.
Charlie Benante meets Eric Carr, afro. Yeah, yeah.
And his band was really cool. Their singer, they had this kind of Queensryche alternative metal kind of vibe to them. Singer had a super high range. And they had a guy who was kind of alternative guitar, heavy metal guitar hero, who is now his brother-in-law, Chris Staros.
Yeah.
And then he had another guitar player who looked a little bit kind of like John Sykes, uh-huh. Paul Larson. And I love this band, and I asked them, could I guitar tech for you? That's kind of how Frank and I became friends, is that I was guitar teching for Frank's band while mm-hmm. I tried to find a group of my own musicians to start.
At Margaritaville, remember?
Of course.
Margaritaville in Atlanta, Georgia, this horrible, horrible
Did you guys
club.
You guys played some covers, right?
We never played any covers.
Covers.
From the beginning.
Because most original bands in Atlanta had to have a set of covers to knock the door down.
Because this was 1986, you know, I mean, you couldn't be an original band. I remember when I got together with these guys for the first time, Chris Staros, he was the guitar player, and he was kind of like the leader, de facto leader of the band. And he was like, I started asking, well, what kind of songs are we going to play? And he was like, well, I've got a bunch of songs. And he was talking about like songs that he'd written. I was like, well, what Rat songs are we going to do? What Judas Priest songs are we going to do? He's like, we're not doing any covers. And I was like, no, what do you mean? We can't do that. And at first I didn't like it because I loved playing all my favorite songs, you know? And he was like, no, I'm not wasting time playing covers. We're playing all our own stuff. And that's what we did from the beginning. And it was hard to get gigs, you know, doing that because everybody wanted covers. In fact, we got booked at this club where they didn't know we were an original band. They booked us for like a week of playing, like, you know, one night stands for like a week in this club. And the guy said, well, how do you want me to advertise this on the little thing outside, you know, the the marquee outside? And Chris said, so-and-so presents all original rock music with Lethal Promise. And the guy's face just went like, y'all don't play any covers?
The Frank's band had of course, they had their, like, Iron Maiden, like every band, they had a song, Lethal Promise, which was the closer. It was great. But my favorite song, Lethal...
These can be found on YouTube, by the way.
Yes, my favorite song by Frank's Lethal Promise outfit was Titties and Death.
Jeez.
Which is
just Tits and Death.
Oh, Tits and Death. Sorry, yes.
That was the title.
Yeah,
Tits.
Sorry. Yeah.
I don't believe that one's on YouTube.
It doesn't make our epic song, Why'd You Kill Grandpappy, seem like such a bad song title.
Well, Tits and Death was clever because the whole idea was it was the reason why young dudes went to go see horror movies was right. for tits and
nice,
death.
Nice. Yeah.
And it was a heavy song.
It was pretty heavy, yeah. Yeah.
And that's what Why'd You Kill Grandpappy was a song about that, about a murderer that killed grandfather, but it was 9 minutes long. What would we do? This is great though. Don't forget who we were playing, who our heroes were.
This was Scimitar,
Maiden and Metallica.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What we did, it's very much what Lars and James do now. We record a part, stop the cassette, rehearse the next part because there was lots of tempo changes, record that, stop the cassette, so it'd be like na 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 na. So, but we had that. So, just to say too, so there was like other rival bands in the Winnipeg area. It was called St. James where we lived. And we used to hang out at 7-Eleven. There was a 7-Eleven and a McDonald's. That's where everybody hung out. All the rockers, wintertime, summertime, whatever. And there was one band that like I said, we played no gigs because AF wouldn't let us. But we thought we were a pretty hot shit band. And there was another band that we hated called Seventh Heaven. They were from the rival high school, John Taylor. And
we had a Seventh Heaven.
They played gigs like at clubs like you guys did, but they played like Separate Ways and they were really good. And I hated the drummer. He just pissed me off. He'd always be hanging around with this super cool long hair, always tight jeans. And like, I hate this guy. And the guy's name was Brent Fitz.
Oh,
he is now Slash's drummer after drumming for Alice Cooper and freaking Gene Simmons now.
I'm going to tell him you said that.
He knows it. I told him first time I saw him, I said, dude, I used to hate
you. I hated
you. He goes, I never hated you. I thought you were cool. I hated you. And it was because Warren hit him. Look at Fitz. Asshole Fitz, look at this guy, Fitz, stupid Sasquatch. He was so mad because Fitz had a better kit and the rival drummers, right?
Three random kick drum.
Yeah, it was so bad.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So Billy, when you first, how old were you when you first moved to LA?
I was 17.
Gosh, so you're still high school age.
Yeah.
Did you graduate?
No, I didn't.
So you dropped out, you proverbial musician.
GED, yeah, and John or Possum had already moved out there, and he had a band. They were called Forced Entry. The guitar player quit. All right. So they had already played a few gigs out there, and the guitar player quit. So he calls my mom up one day, and I wasn't doing good in school and this and that and the other. And she's like, well, John called the other day and talked to me. Would you want to move out to L.A.? I was like,
your mom asked you?
Oh, yeah. I was like, hey, are you kidding? Hell yeah, mom.
My mom would have erased that from the answering machine.
Mom was like, you want to do it?
You want
to go give it a shot? God bless mom, you know?
Way to go,
for her.
Mom.
She did. And so I moved out there. We played all the clubs.
Did you have money, or like, what, did you get did she helped, some well, money to go?
Yeah,
out
they
there?
Helped. My family helped me out. Then I got a job as a telemarketer out there, 6 a.m. to 12:20 p.m. every day.
What's your job?
Just getting on the phone, getting the sale going. Then you would get the closer to close the deal.
What were you selling?
Selling office supplies.
And I'm gonna call you Dwight.
The first person, the first company I called when I got out there was Mom's company. I had to sell them off supplies.
Okay, so pretend the phone rings. Hello.
Hey, this is Billy from such and such. Who do I speak to you? Who do I speak to about your office supply purchases?
That would be me. I'm in charge.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what I got going on here. I read off a script, you know. Then I would get to the point where, oh, okay, well, let me introduce you to Sam. He's my boss, and he's going to close out the deal here for you.
And wow. That guy would come in and throw it down.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
go from there. Hey, and just the 7 degrees of Ward and Gray. So Billy's mom worked for an insurance company that he sold office supplies to, and then the office next door was my dad's travel agency.
Yes, it was. My mom knew his
travel.
My mom knew your dad.
They knew each other.
Wow. Yes, they did.
That's great, man.
And I hated Billy Gray like you hated Fritz Fitz. I was like, what do you mean he can play flying high again solo? That asshole. What the? Like, was he abducted by an alien? What happened? Like, I'm still trying to play. I'm still trying to play Looks to Kill. Damn you.
That was a big hit for us, by the way. When we did our Maiden and Priest covers, and we did play our Maiden Metallica covers, when we played parties, the ones that we did play, you had to whip out the Talk Dirty to Me. Because at least then the chicks would be like,
That we did too. Sleaze Patrol played it.
It's such a bad song.
Never liked it.
Chicks loved it.
Yeah, they did.
Did Sleaze Patrol become Lickety Split?
No, that was way before none of the same members.
Oh, okay.
None of the same.
They became the originals.
Yeah.
Because hey, Billy's had several bands that I knew of. Like, he had popular bands in Charlotte that did well. Because then after forced entry,
I moved. John quit.
Right, and you moved back.
Back home. Yeah,
and then you started Lickety Split. Then
yes, okay. I jumped right into that.
Yeah, and then he had a band called Method 51 that was a popular.
That's what led me to you guys. Yeah. I fronted that as a singer. It was a rapcore band, and I fronted and played guitar for them.
It was a trio.
We had an imprint deal. Yeah, three piece. We had an imprint deal with Atlantic. Had a record out, and which ironically had a song called "To Be the Man." You got to beat the man. Remember, I played you that video.
You did. That's right.
Which has in the loop in the middle of the song, the Lionheart, Chris Jericho's about to be. You know,
that's right.
You remember that? So, and that led me to opening for Stuck Mojo, and that's why I'm here today.
It's history. Yeah.
So I'm going to go back, like I said, because I had this high school band where we actually were together for a while. So our first and only battle of the bands, it was at a teenage nightclub, and I've been trying to think of the name the whole time. It began with an S. It wasn't Sidewinders or Splitters, or it was something called, like, I don't remember what it was, but you had to audition to get this
shenanigans.
Might as well be. But it was a teenage nightclub.
Wasn't that the cool thing about the 80s were teen clubs?
We used to play them all the time.
And the idea
dude.
For that was you could go there, dance, and hang out. There's no alcohol, but it'd be a place. It's like a youth
group.
Your
parents could drop you off. They knew that you would, basically within the confines of this.
The Boys and Girls Club, but mine, kind of a cooler version. So it was all the way over the other side of town for us, and we had to audition, so we sent in a tape of an original song, which was City Nights, which started with a drum, bass, and guitar solo, like something out of Eat 'Em and Smile, because it was like
get a hit.
Yeah, do do cha do do cha do do da little da little like bound to get down, down to get down, down to get down.
Which kind of sounds like I'm sure you made a lot of friends on the dance floor with that.
We did. So we auditioned and we made it. You had to play one cover and one original. So we did City Nights and the cover. Once again, to appeal to the teenage nightclub.
Big City Nights.
Well, the piece sells, but who's buying?
Oh, okay.
As you do.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You needed a manager.
So we showed up, and dude, I was all out. I smashed a mirror, and I glued mirror onto gauntlets, which were made out of socks that I cut the ends off. So a gauntlet is like a big long sleeve the mirrors were glued to my jeans, made me have droopy drawers because they were too heavy. And I had a cut off super tight white shirt, and I drew a question mark on it. Because why?
Mysterious.
Why? Yeah, mysterious. So we
gender
started
neutral.
Yeah. So we started playing it. We opened with B Cells. And of course, that's me, dude. I'm the bass player. Nothing. My freaking chord came unplugged because I stepped on it when I was rocking, and the chord came out of the bass and fell on the ground.
Oh, God.
So it goes. And none of us know what to do. So we stop.
Oh, God.
I plug in. We start again.
One, two, three, four.
What else can you do?
And we never knew about having, like, you keep your kick drum in position by putting, like, a brick in front of it or something.
So it was creeping.
It was creeping. Warren was trying to play. And he's like, holy shit. I can't play. I can't read. So we stumble and bumble through, and lo and behold, we won. We won the first round, and I will never forget how exciting it was, because there was one girl, her name was Carolyn Mraz, and when the local paper came out that Scimitar was playing at Name of Club in the Battle of the Bands, she cut the picture out and put it in her locker.
Wow.
It was our first rock and roll fan.
You won against the guy's band with the one glass eye.
And so then the next week we went back and we got destroyed by this band called The Fourth Floor, and they did some wicked kind of cool, like a Toto type song, and then they did Back in the USSR. And they murdered us. And that was it. We were done. And I remember just the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
They played songs people like.
They played, it was like Don't Stop Believing or something like that, you know?
It's your first lesson. You should have played the Beatles.
You knew better. They were your favorite band.
But I just, and then the caveat of this was they showed it on this show. It was on every Friday night. And it was called Bundy's Late Night Adventure.
Ooh.
And Bundy was like the host, and he would do different stuff. And it was on. We were on for like 2 minutes, and we recorded it. And so every guy in the band got to keep it for like a week, right? And I was the first guy because I was, you know, I was the bass player, and I probably, whatever, cried about it till I got it. So I watched it one time. And I go downstairs to watch it again, and I'm looking to watch, and it's like Love Boat. That my mom had taped. And I was like, oh, okay, Mom, where's the tape of Scimitar? She goes, what do you mean? She goes, where's the Scimitar tape? She goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, okay, hold on a second. Please don't say that you... She goes, the Love Boat was on, and I recorded what the tape was. I was like, Mom, are you...
taped the Love Boat?
And she's like, why didn't you label? Why don't you remember the VHS tapes? You could click the back, the little script tab. She goes, and I never thought about writing Scimitar on it. I never thought about clicking the tab out of it. And my mom recorded over Scimitar with Love Boat. And imagine me having to tell Ahoff and Rumpel that the... Because remember, what those days, you couldn't go back and watch it again. No, it was never on again.
That's it. That was done.
I even called Bundy's Late Night Adventure at the studio, said, do you guys have the tape of the show? They're like, tape of the show? We record over it right away with Love Boat or whatever's on it.
Fantasy Island.
Yeah. So that was it, man, and that was kind of the end. After that, we couldn't continue on under those circumstances, and that was pretty much it.
No, once the tape was erased with Love Boat, it was a sign.
It was done. And even my dad, even for a high school graduation gift, he bought a studio time, and Ahoff just wasn't interested, because what are we going to record, you know? And I was like, well, can't we record something? He's like, no, we're done. The tape's recorded over. We're finished.
Oh, now, fast forward now as a dad, have you ever done something like that? Like accidentally erased over a dance recital, or
it's different now though, because everything is recorded on like a phone, or so it's
out there.
Yeah,
that's like a great point.
You know, now you would, if it was on TV, you would just DVR it, and if you erased it, I mean, you know, somebody else would have DVR'd it, or you can find it, or they replay it, or something. You know, YouTube.
YouTube.
Somebody would have found it. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's so
that's just
true.
How it was back
these
in those days.
Everything's out there now. I mean, there's so many things that are just gone.
Yeah, I agree. There were so many moments of my career, even like into, you know, making records, that things had just gone into the ether, you know, pre-YouTube, and you've got a video cassette of it, but I don't know where that video cassette, or did it get erased?
Didn't label it.
Exactly. Right.
There was a cassette of that first gig that I did with that band with no name, where we, you know, played that party that I was talking about. And for the longest time, I had that cassette. It sounded horrible because it was recorded with one of those, you know, the classic cassette player, you know, with the buttons.
Yeah, record, play.
Yeah, record, play, rewind. And I had it for the longest time, and I actually did a drum solo on that recording. And it's the one time in the entire set that we played, we played probably six songs, but it was the one time you hear people cheer over the music, you know, like, because, you know, it's like we would play a song and we'd end and people would clap and it was cool, you know, and people, and you'd hear the talking, you know, of people in the background. Then we'd play another song, and I did a drum solo and went right from the drum solo into the beat that opens Living After Midnight. And as soon as we hit the first chorus, you hear the audience roar like over the music. And it's the one time that happened. And it's like, I'd give anything to have that tape.
Tell it to the end.
We had this, I just always remember there was this guy in the background who was a friend of mine from high school, this real rednecky dude. In between every song, he would be like, y'all play some Ted Nugent. And like before the last song, you know, he's like, you know, everybody clapping, cheering, play some Ted Nugent. Y'all play some Ted Nugent. And before the last song, you hear him go, hey, seriously, play some Ted Nugent.
We just as we wind down here, a couple last thoughts. So we mentioned City Nights. We actually had a video for City Nights that we recorded. And then we recorded a video for another song called Stranded, which I based on a Stephen King short story called...
You recorded concept videos?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
But
it had nothing to do with one of the... So Stranded was based on Survivor Type, which is about a guy who's stranded on an island and ends up eating himself. So wow. That's what I was writing about. Hey, you know why? Because Anthrax wrote about Stephen King. Yeah. I should write about Stephen King too. And that started with a bass solo. Ding digga digging, ding digga digging, ding digga digging, ding digga down, ding digga digging, ding digga digging, ding digga digging, ding digga down. And so the opening concept was Scimitar walking through the schoolyard and being accosted by a gang of toughs. And they're like, who are you? We're Scimitar. And we're super tough. And these guys are, who are you?
Who
we're
are
Scimitar.
You? Were they from Asia or something?
It's like Scimitar sucks, man. Yeah, you suck. The bass sucks, the guitar sucks, and the drums suck. And we think Scimitar sucks. And then we go, Scimitar, like Voivod. And then we attack, and there's a big gang fight, and we beat the hell out of the whole gang.
Boy,
and
you guys were ambitious.
And then we just keep walking. No, wait a second. It was just for City Nights. We were playing Stranded as we were walking on the Ghetto Blaster. We beat up the villains. Then we went to play Stranded, and then we went into the City Nights video.
How did you edit it all together?
We had a guy who could edit with a cord from the VHS camera, which was very big.
Yeah,
it was
of
like
course.
A capture camera. But if you plugged it into, he was kind of a real techie type of guy. He wasn't in the band, and he could figure out how to edit. Now every edit, much like the Why Do You Kill Grandpappy, it had like a little. So you like in every edit during the video would have.
Do you have that tape?
I think I have it.
Because to me, that's one of those. That would be the thing that I would love to have. Is like capturing the youthful, me at that moment in life of just saying, you know, look at us as kids and our imagination and.
Because you didn't know. Here we are sitting in Berlin. We had a jam-packed show last night. We played to, I don't know, 10,000 people the night before at Wacken. Mm. And it all starts for all of us just like this, whether you're in, you know, whether you're Paul McCartney or Lars Ulrich or, you know, a guy who's just starting right now, a kid just starting in the basement. And that's kind of the one sad thing that is, I don't, like, my son's friend is in a band. His name is Julian. I took him and Ash to see Kiss. And I said to Paul Stanley, I said, tell him what you play. He said, I just learned how to play Creatures of the Night. He goes, well, maybe you could teach me how to play it. And he was just so excited. And I was like, Ash, go sing for his band. You can sing. That's not my style. It's not my style. But I'm wondering if there's like, is there kids still getting together and playing in bands, or is it more just the video game culture?
They are. It's not, I don't think it's, you know, it isn't what it used to be, but there's still kids out there putting bands together.
Yeah, I actually have read that guitar sales are way down.
That's right. Did you hear Kirk Hammett said about that?
Yeah. Gibson, Fender, all these big companies are really suffering because kids are just not playing instruments anymore. Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, and it's, you know, of course, you know, they've shifted their attention to other things, tech and like you said, video games and stuff. And maybe, you know, maybe in, you know, 50 years, there won't be bands with guitars and bass and drums. Maybe everything will be program based.
Yeah.
It would be sad if that was the case. I mean, you think about 100 years ago, you would never have a symphony orchestra that it could ever think about being replaced by synthesizers. And
sure. Or like Kirk said, like, you know, a mandolin or a lute used to be like the forefathers of all instruments. They don't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point.
But at the same time, though, if you think about it, like one of the biggest up and coming bands is Greta Van Fleet.
That's right?
And they've gone back to
that's
straight
true.
Roots.
Yeah, so, and like hopefully, vinyl sales have increased, you know.
Yes.
I think hopefully, I mean, this may be me being naive, you know, or Pollyanna, but I'm hoping
wow,
that
good word.
Yeah. I'm hoping that you know, there'll be a little bit more of a resurgence of kids, you know, who like might experience, you know, like there'll be kids growing up who've come up who haven't ever seen a live band play like in person.
Right.
And the first time they see it, go, wow, that's really cool.
Well, you can think quite often at Fozzie shows, someone's first show, and they're like 18 or 16 yeah. or 15. Yeah.
Is
yeah,
they're interested. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, they see somebody playing guitar in a live situation, and it'll be like so alien to them. That's just like, that's amazing. How do you do that? I want to do that.
Isn't it interesting that you brought up the hottest kind of new upstart band is Greta Van Fleet, and then you bring up the idea, the concept of how there's been a big resurgence for
vinyl,
which both harken back to kind of a desire for nostalgia,
yes,
because Greta Van Fleet is nothing more than a real dig back into some retro
sure.
approach
yeah,
to
yeah.
music.
Totally.
So maybe that is the answer as music kind of lurches forward kind of into the retro age. Maybe there is room for young kids who love AC/DC or Motorhead and can embrace
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
these kind of rootsy,
the raw.
Like Greta Van Fleet, who are obviously influenced by Zeppelin and bands like that.
I mean, how does it
not.
Make you feel when how does it make you feel when you see like a 17 or 18 year old kid wearing a Zeppelin shirt or an AC/DC shirt?
Or
know?
How does it make you feel when you see Greta Van Fleet being the hottest band in the land right now and they're 20 years old?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good for rock and roll.
Yes,
it's good
it is.
For all
totally.
Of us.
Totally.
You know, got a couple last points. As when I went to Calgary to start wrestling, I met another guy called Lenny Olson, who we started jamming together with a drum machine. And we made a record with the band name of Great Caesar's Ghost. And we made copies of the record and we put them on sale at Big Rock Records and CDs in Okotoks, Alberta. And we sold more copies than Elton John and Nirvana. We sold four, they sold three. So we made a big sign.
Hey,
outsold Nirvana and Elton John.
Yeah.
And a song on that record was a ballad that I wrote on guitar and vocal only based on a Halloween song called Longing, which is a Michael Kiske, basically, just guitar and vocal. And the song is called God Pounds His Nails. Years later, I took those lyrics, gave them to Rich, and that's where the song God Pounds His Nails came from.
Oh, that's cool.
Little known fact.
We outsold awesome. Madonna once.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Where? Big Rock Records and Tapes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it was at Virgin Records. She had an album release, and Rising was released. The Stuck Mojo album Rising was released the same night. But we did go and did we do a signing that day?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a signing.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, we cheated somewhat, but still, it looked good to look on their weekly sales.
Yeah, their
we
weekly
were number
sales,
one,
we
Madonna
sold like 4,800 records,
cool.
and she sold like 35. It's like, we sold almost 5,000 copies, and she only sold like 35, and she's Madonna.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, at that Virgin Records.
At
yeah,
that
yeah.
one location.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll take it, though.
Yeah.
Billy, when you were on the Sunset Strip, what was your favorite gig that you ever had? Did you ever play with anybody cool?
Yeah. My favorite gig was at the Roxy, and it was with the band called Pretty Boy Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't one of my favorites,
yeah.
but
they're a big band.
The place was packed, dude. We were main support. It was an awesome show and something I'll never forget.
Right. Yeah.
That's amazing that Billy Gray tasted all of this stuff.
That's what
first.
I mean.
Yeah.
He
and you're talking
it.
About
played
1988, 1989. 88.
Like you were part of that scene, dude. Like we watched Decline of the Western Civilization.
Yep.
You might be in that movie in the
my
crowd
buddy,
somewhere.
My roommate was in the movie. He was in a band called Tommy Rot.
Tommy Rot. We know that guy.
Yeah.
My band is called Tommy Rot.
Tommy Rot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I started Stuck Mojo in 1989. But we didn't get our start. I mean, we eventually started opening for some nationals, but we actually didn't get our record deal until 1994. So Billy was already, I think we opened for biggest band we ever opened up for early on was 311, and that would have been kind of 93 or 92 or something.
Yeah, that was before me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, dude.
Pretty
Boy Floyd.
Yeah. Stevie Sex Summers.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. What was your favorite song that used to play in the high school band, cover, original, or both? Frank?
Oh, man. God. come back to me. I'd have to think about that for a second.
Billy? I'm going to go ahead and say Ain't Talking About Love. Yeah. I just love that riff. Dun, gun, 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 and being able to start the song and at the front of the stage, you know, as a kid, you know, the crowd knew the song already. And after seeing Van Halen play it, it was awesome.
That's great. For me, as an original, it was City Nights, which later got changed to Puzzled Life. Because City Nights was too pedestrian. And actually, that song, those guys went on to play in a band called Skullduggery, which actually had some steam in the early 90s in Winnipeg. They played all the bars, the place that we used to go watch bands play.
Okay.
And it was a little bit of my DNA that they were still playing Puzzled Life, which I wrote a couple riffs for. They dropped the bass at the beginning, which pissed me off. But my favorite song that we played was Aces High. And it was always fun to play because I always loved that part. And like I said, I was not a great bass player, but I could hold my own. That part, ding, 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 ding. It was the one time when we nailed it. Warren was on the drums. It was great. And the final caveat was we only had a three-piece because no one else we knew wanted to play those type of songs. So one day, there's this guy moved down the street. I think I might have told this story recently. His name was Rick Ramratten. And he was...
Rick Ramratten.
Strong.
He was not East Indian, but from the West Indies. Or he might have been East Indian, but he was very dark, and he was like an Indian cat, whether it was East or West or whatever. And he's like, hey, you talk like this. Yeah, I play guitar, dude. And I was like, hey, what do you play? I play Iron Maiden and stuff like that. And I was like, why don't you come over to our house and jam? And it's like, do you know Aces? You know, he's like, you guys know Aces High? We're like, yeah, we know Aces High. You know Aces High? Yeah, yeah. So we played Aces High, and it was first time Scimitar ever had two guitar players. Finally, all these bands that we covered were always Megadeth, Metallica, Maiden. They're all two guitar bands. We only have one guitar player. And it sounded so amazing. And it was so great. And when it was done, it's like, dude, do you want to join our band? He's like, no, dude, I'm okay. I'll see you later. And he never came again. And he must have thought we sucked.
Well, hey, you ended up in a band with four guitar players at one point.
That's
so.
True. That's true. That's true. Rich?
I'd probably say I go not the obvious thing, but that kind of high school dance band we used to play in excess, Don't Change.
What song is Don't Change?
That's a great song.
Don't change for you.
Oh, right.
Don't change.
That's a great
thing.
Song, yeah.
For me.
Like that.
Yeah. I'm standing here on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Rule.
Is that from Listen Like Thieves or is that from earlier than that?
No, that's from an album called Shabu
Shabbat. Shabu Shabbat, yeah, with original, is it Original Sin on that?
No. That only had Don't Change and what was the first song
in
that
album?
It was a big.
One thing.
Yeah, it's the one thing.
Down.
Yeah.
Or for me, like one thing leads to another. Like,
oh, there Fix.
Was, we used to play all of those songs. Like that was like my era where I really learned. And those songs were so cool because they appealed to rockers like us, but they also translated to girls. You could get people to dance to those songs. It was like that the Pretty in Pink soundtrack era where like rock dudes still liked it. It didn't alienate.
Isn't it funny though, as we sit here talking, you know, is that all of what you're talking about, the four of our influences and how we kind of started, all go into the Fozzy pot. You've got kind of the more new wave dancey stuff. You've got kind of more of the proggy heavier stuff. You've got kind of a glam element. You got Frank, you're talking about playing hard hitting original stuff. It's like, it really is kind of a little bit of the ingredients of the Fozzy soup.
Yeah, it's a hodgepodge.
It is true. When you listen to the Judas album, there are so many like different elements that come together to make kind of what is a really unique sound. And there are some real dance elements in there, and there's some real metal elements, and there's some prog elements. All of these things that we're talking about, the
glam
we kind of grew up within is on these records. And I think, again, you know, I think this is a cool conversation because a great way to tie it up, obviously, is that we are really who we are. This is not really put on.
And
everyone wants to experiment and try new things. And we have. I mean, we've constantly tried to spread our wings a bit and push ourselves to be as good as we can be and try a little bit more here. But at our core, we've always been this groovy hard rock band with some proggy elements to it with big choruses. And I think that's a product of who we were when we were kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Good stuff, guys. And Garth Kwasnitsa, if you're out there, please tell me how the hell you spelled your name, because it's really bugging me. All right, Fozzy doing a bunch of gigs on the upcoming Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part Deux. Book your cabin while you still can at ChrisJerichoCruise.com and come join us when we set sail next January 20th. Ric Flair, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac, Jake the Snake Roberts, Queen Charmel, Booker T, MVP, Vicky Guerrero, Shawn Guerrero, Brad Williams, Jack Slade, Red Cup Jeff, Eric Bischoff, Conrad Thompson. So many high-level Hall of Famers and main event talent on this cruise. Fozzy will be playing Farewell to Fear, Rubik's Cube, Dark Sky Choir, Killer Queens, the greatest female Killer Queen cover in the land, Queen cover band, Dave Spivak Project, Jared James Nichols, Kick-Axe, AEW will be there. Some of the biggest stars in wrestling today will be there. We're about ready to announce some of the roster members from AEW who will be on the Rock and Wrestling Rager. DDP returns to host more live DDP yoga workshops on the ship. Beyond the Darkness hosting creepy paranormal events. So much stuff going on. Book now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We're pretty much at 83% right now. We know it's going coming fast, though. 9 months left before the cruise, but I think we'll probably be sold out in the next month or two. So if you want to come on board, go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and have the vacation of a lifetime. All right, coming up on Friday, one of the newest signings to AEW, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, who's talking about his gimmick, how he got started in wrestling, and of course about his famous father, the late Luke Perry of 90210 and Riverdale. Great guy, good kid. He's a hell of a performer, and we're excited to have him in AEW, and I'm excited to have him on Talk is Jericho on Friday. So we'll see you in a couple days. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy! Sour grapes, rotten cream, overnight bananas, it's all for me. That's from Sour Grapes by Scimitar. Oh, yeah.